Conference record has joined the conference.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Anderson.
Yes, hello.
Hi, it's Barney Moran of the Grateful Web. Is it pronounced Ian or Ian?
It's pronounced Ian.
Okay. Grateful Web thanks you on behalf of listeners who grew up listening or lucky enough to see Jethro Tull perform, and on behalf of all the bands who followed after Tull, for the clear message the minstrel is finally free to tell all without fear of having his head cut off. So my first question is, essentially, how did the minstrel come to be? What was your first experience with an instrument?
My first experience with a musical instrument was probably being encouraged by a completely mad grandmother to play a few notes on a piano when I was, I guess, 4 or 5 years old. And she was such a terrifying woman, it really put me off music until I was, I think, probably eight or nine years old. And I spied an advertisement in a newspaper for an Elvis Presley guitar for the pricely sum of, I suppose, loosely translated into, about $2. And as you can imagine, it turned out to be a grave disappointment when it arrived through the post, because it was, in fact, just a plastic ukulele and sounded quite awful and wouldn't stay in tune. But that was my first musical instrument. And it did, however, have Elvis Presley's autograph engraved in the plastic and a cheesy picture of him playing a much bigger man-sized guitar. And that set me off on a quite cynical course of how to avoid mail-order items, at least for the next 20 or 30 years of my life, since it was a complete rip-off. However, it was at least a chance to strum something. And then when I was 11 years old, I think I got a beat-up old Spanish guitar and tried to learn to strum that. But it wasn't really until I was about 15 or 16 that I started playing the guitar a little more seriously, you know, learning some proper chords and learning to play take the first steps really towards improvisation, and that was in the context of acoustic folk blues, which was what I listened to when I was a teenager. So that was my first instrument, and then when I was 20, I took up the flute and a few other acoustic instruments, which I've learned to play at least enough to use them for writing songs and to manfully attempt to play them on stage and earn an honest crust.
Picking up the flute at 20, it was pretty brave for the rock scene. What came first, the flute as a way to play music or to express yourself through the music?
Well, it was an alternative instrument to the guitar, and everybody played guitar. And by the time I was 20 years old, there were, you know, we knew of lots of guitar players. I mean, Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page were, and Ritchie Blackmore. They were all quite active on the session musician scene in London, and of course Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton were hot on the heels. And it really didn't seem a lot of points. You know, when I first heard Eric Clapton, I guess I would have been 18 or 19. I decided at that point that really, I was never going to be that good as a guitar player, and I should find something else to play that I was reasonably confident Eric Clapton couldn't play. And indeed, over the years, I've kept a careful watching eye over Eric Clapton's career, and so far he has not yet gravitated to the flute, so I think I'm on pretty safe ground.
When I mention the minstrel, there is a real sense of basically a reincarnation of a medieval minstrel, but without the fear, as we said in the beginning, of getting your head cut off. I mean, nothing is off limits to you in terms of whores, hobos, the Church of England, the all-time losers trying to win the rat race. Again, that seems to fly in the face of what modern music expected, and I'm wondering, you said you had cynicism from the Presley guitar. Was that the start of that cynicism?
Well, I don't think so. I think I've probably been naturally a little wary, rather than necessarily cynical, but a little wary of things that are broadcast, spun, and doctored to make us you know, take in a message, and of course that includes necessarily the way in which many religions are presented to us. And when I was at school, I rather objected to the way that I was taught about, well, essentially just Christianity, because we didn't touch upon other religions in my school, and I thought that was then a little odd. And today I think it's pretty pretty criminal, really, that we live in a multi-ethnic, multicultural society, and really the culture of religions, plural, is something that I think everyone should grow up with some understanding of. And I do feel that by being taught the essence of different religions, the common ground and the differences, is something that all children all over the world should have, regardless of perhaps the native religion of their country or society. And by teaching children about other values in an unbiased and open way, I think we might diffuse a lot of the prejudices and the hatreds that are so rampant. And I didn't get that opportunity as a schoolboy, and I don't think that, although today there is a little more enlightenment, certainly here in the UK, about teaching comparative religion rather than just a dedicated one religious kind of experience in school, it's still been a long time coming, and it's still probably not as emphatic and across the board as I would like to see it. But that's not just cynicism; it's a discomfort and a mistrust of having things presented in the way that is just spinning one version of the story, and that I feel is probably something that does provide the essence of creative thought in songwriting, is to tackle some of those issues.
Did you get any grief from record companies or radio stations for some of the content?
Not really. I think it was in the USA was the only place in the world where there was any real condemnation or anger about the interpretation of the album Aqualung specifically, and that just happened, I suppose, in a few Baptist strongholds of the southern states of the USA. But notably in Italy, it was an album that immediately catapulted Jethro Tull to some considerable level of approval. And I don't ever recollect any condemnation from the Catholic Church or indeed from the Christian Church anywhere else. I mean, I think on the whole, people who took the trouble to listen to the lyrics and understand what I might be saying really understood that this wasn't just a blanket condemnation of Christianity. It was a critical response to some of the ways in which the values of Christianity are sometimes taught to us and presented to us. But the only place I had a problem was a little bit in the USA. But then, you know, extreme religious views are just as extreme there as they are in some other places, which we probably shouldn't go into.
Well, I'd like to just apologize for the USA if I can.
No, well, you don't have to do that. I've been traveling to the USA for many, many years and made lots of friends and hardly any enemies. So I'm a champion of the USA in other parts of the world, and have been over many, many years, for all the good things that it's done and all the unbiased things that it's done and the help that it's brought to many different countries. But you still can't escape the fact that in your country and in mine, we do have a history of some pretty radical religious activities in our history, and some pretty regrettable things were done in the name of the Christian religion, which I guess we should all feel a little ashamed of. So this pop it goes with the experience. If you find religion, then you will also find some reason to question and query and have to give some very, very serious thought to some of the scary moments. I mean, I've just been reading I just came back from a vacation with my wife, and I took with me the King James version of the Bible, and I was wading through some of the Old Testament when I was on vacation, just to kind of refresh my mind about some things. And you know, there are lots of things in there that I find truly appalling, but it's a you know, it's a translation of a translation many, many years ago, and I have to take the slightly broader view that I shouldn't take it too literally, even though some of the language does appall me.
One of my favorite things about your music is you go much beyond just questioning society. You find simple joys in the simple things in life, from a cup of coffee to your mate spilling crumbs on the bed. And again, it's going against the tide, not worrying about what people want to hear, but telling us a unique story.
Well, the joy of being a songwriter is you get to express different facets of your personality, of your character, and it doesn't all have to be carping and critical and bitter and cynical and twisted. It can sometimes be whimsical and upbeat and humorous and even maybe, you know, a little bit romantic. And so all of those things, they are the arsenal available to the songwriter that he can or she can bring. Bring into battle, really, in writing songs, and I think it is quite a joyful experience, really, to be able to do that. I've often thought that the degree of freedom that you have as a songwriter probably excels the freedom that you have in many other creative disciplines, where you do have to kind of toe the line a bit more, and particularly for classical musicians who have to read the dots as they were written by Bach, Beethoven, Haydn, whoever it might be. You only have the slightest nuance of expression to vary in the tiniest and almost imperceptible way what was written or previously accepted as a good reading of that work. But as a songwriter, you know, you get to write your own chapter and verse, and it's a glorious experience to be able to do that, whether you're writing complex music or just simple little ditties.
There is a very powerful character that emerges through the pantheon of the Jethro Tull work, a very strong character that's conveyed to us as we grew up and helped form our minds. In 1,000 years from now, when we won't have the privilege of seeing Jethro Tull perform live, what can you tell the listeners in 1,000 years from now, who only will have videos and the recordings of your work, about that character?
Well, first of all, the difference between the character and me in real life is really not that great. I think I wouldn't be alone at all in unveiling the thought that really being on stage is just a slightly, I mean, you just turn up the wick a little bit, you burn a little bit brighter, but essentially I think Keith Richard is kind of the same kind of guy off stage as he is on stage, except that he's a little bit louder and brasher and whatever. I don't really see a big difference between most people who perform on stage and their private life personality. It's just that you don't have to spend all of your waking day quite at the level that you may turn up to when you go on stage. But it's not like being an actor, you know, and being one kind of a person in real life and then sitting in your dressing room in a theater in London for an hour before you go on, gradually getting into character, getting your mind and your body into the physical and mental role of playing the character live on stage in front of an audience. That is a metamorphosis that is a true Jekyll and Hyde scenario. But being a musician, you walk on stage, it's still you, and you still feel like you, but you just, as I say, you just turn the wick up, you burn a little brighter for an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it is, and you don't have the feeling that you're actually doing anything that is particularly either changing or in any way betraying the person that you really think you are the rest of the time. But that's why I could never be an actor. You see, I don't really like the idea of role playing too much. It's for me, I'm quite happy just to be myself, just a little bit a little bit brighter and louder and brasher, perhaps, than I am in my rather more private personal life.
If you were an American, the next thing we would expect from you is that you would run the country.
Well, as you're probably aware, we've just had a general election here in the last few days, and so running the country or complaining about those who have or are about to try to do so in the new government that was just formed last night is something very, very, very current, very, very poignant, and something that I think we're all thinking about over here and reevaluating our political beliefs and our thoughts about the future and the sacrifices that we have to make during the next few years to try and get back to somewhere close to where we were in the heady days of 4 or 5 years ago, when everything seemed to be going relatively swimmingly.
But, is politics something you would consider?
Well, I guess with the kind of awareness that I have now, you know, plus perhaps the fact that I've moved a little bit in political circles just you know, through people I've met or one or two initiatives that I've been asked to join regarding some political lobbying for some changes in the music industry and copyright laws. I would imagine if I was 30 years younger, I might well be thinking about it. But at this point, it's really a little bit too late to even think about standing as an MP. It would be rather unusual, particularly in the mood of the time now, where you have a relatively young president. We have the youngest prime minister in the UK for 200 years, as of last night. And I think we're looking at a time when the ideal time to be not entering politics but reaching your zenith is probably somewhere late 30s, early 40s. And I'm a long way past that. I've got about as much chance of being a winning a Formula One Grand Prix as I have of being a minister or in the cabinet of a government. So I think I've left it too late.
Well, I know it's late there, and we really appreciate the time. It's a tremendous honor to be able to speak with you as someone growing up with your music. And the Grateful Web will be following your tour in America. And we wish you and the band all the best.
Well, thank you very much indeed. We'll look forward to being with you in just a couple of weeks. Ash clouds and strikes permitting, since we're facing some quite considerable changes in our travel plans during the next few weeks as a result of various issues. But we'll get there by hook or by crook.
We're very excited to have you back again, and again, thank you so much.
Terrific. Nice to talk to you.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. We also want to thank Ann Lighten of Lighten Media for making this happen. This is Barney Moran of the Grateful Web signing off. Again, it is May 12th, 2010. Thanks so much.